Greetings and welcome to the AVOD. I'm Cam Vargelon.
I'm DM.
And we are back for week two of Lovecraft March. Marchcraft? No,
that's bad.
No, the problem is Minecraft is so, you know, appending craft to the end of words now associates you with Minecraft instead of Lovecraft, so, you know.
Did it ever associate with Lovecraft?
I like to think it did. Hence, Hatecraft.
But that's a specific
very
reference.
Very specific example, yes. It is.
And if you don't know what we're talking about,
then we pity you.
Yeah, that's 100%. Too bad for you.
We very much pity you. Oh my god. Alright. Alright, let's do this. We are going to jump right in with some random crap. I want to recommend a video game, which is Outcast, A New Beginning. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with Outcast.
I've heard of it.
Okay, well, it's a game from quite a while ago. It's one of the earliest attempts at an open world, action exploration game. You're a marine who got sent on a suicide mission to an alien planet, and you took part in a revolution. Honestly, it was a really entertaining game, but it was clunky in the way that you have to assume an attempt at doing a giant open world action game from 25 years ago would have been.
So right.
The original team has come back with full resources and made a sequel, and not a remake or anything. It is a follow-up to the story of the first one. Set 20 years after the first one, and it looks gorgeous. It plays as well as anything I've ever, you have a jetpack right from the start of the game, which, you know, generally, if you give someone a jetpack at the start of the game, I'm probably going to love that game. I like jetpacks. I saw the Rocketeer when I was very young. Now I've been pro jetpack the rest of my life. But yeah, it's a magnificent game. They've done an incredible job. It is very much a European-style action RPG, like the old Gothic games, like my beloved LX. But yeah, I think there's about 40 hours worth of game in here, depending on how good you are at it. There's a story difficulty level if you have trouble with the combat. And more importantly, it's just a beautiful world to explore. It's one of those games where it's not so big that there are these giant empty sections of the map. Basically, every part of the map has some kind of an activity to do, and it is just such a gorgeously designed world. It's just fun to glide around in your wonderful jetpack, and then you get a swirl suit. So it's like you get a jetpack, you get a swirl suit. Once you got those two, you can basically go anywhere and do anything, and it is fantastic. So yeah, Outcast, New Beginning, can't recommend it highly enough.
Okay.
All right. Next up, I believe it's time for a quiz?
I guess so.
Alright. Part one. Which actress played the heroine Helen Lyle in the 1992 film Candyman?
I know this.
You do know this.
Right? She's got three names?
She does not. She has two names.
So, thinking of someone else then.
You definitely are.
Damn it. Shoot. All right, let's circle back.
Okay, I'll give you some time on this one. What 1971 film features a group of killer rats that are led by a man seeking revenge on those who have wronged him? Wronged him.
Willard?
It is called Willard, yeah. All right. Ahem. Jack Nicholson stars as a werewolf in which 1994 movie?
I think it's called Wolf.
It is just called Wolf. You're correct. Nice work. All right. Okay. What 1981 sequel was the feature film debut of James Cameron?
Uh-oh. What's wrong with my... shit. What is wrong with me?
Yeah, that's a bad one.
This is really bad.
This always is.
I know. Aliens.
Oh my, directorial debut. I'm going to give you one more shot at this.
Can you read it again? Maybe I forgot what you were asking.
James Cameron's first movie. It's James a sequel. James Cameron's first what movie
is a sequel. And it's made in 1981?
81, yes. Terminator wasn't his first movie. He first made a sequel.
For
Roger Corman. This is all the help I can give you.
I know. My God. I'm not gonna get it today.
It's called Piranha 2, The Spawning.
I was never gonna get that. Really?
Yeah.
Piranha 2.
It had, flying piranha in it.
Yeah. My goodness.
I know, right? Real rough one. Okay. Next up.
Sorry,
you've lost count, I understand.
God.
This 2001 film involves a religious, fanatical father taking his two sons on a divine mission to kill demons.
Hmm.
One of my favorite movies. The actor in question is Bill Paxton.
Is it Frailty?
It is Frailty! Yes! Way to go!
Thank you. I was thinking that before you said who was in it.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. next up.
Oh, no, we never... Helen Lyle, I don't remember.
There's one more question.
Oh, God.
You can't count today. It's fine.
No, don't worry clearly about not.
It. Helen Lyle's Virginia Madsen.
Oh, goodness. No, yeah, I was never going to get it.
Never going to get it. All right. Here's a question that I honestly don't know the answer to.
Oh.
I've been 5 for 6, but I have no idea, and so I didn't check the other side, the card. Who are the only two actors who have faced off against an alien, a Terminator, or a Predator? Obviously, I know one of these.
An alien, a Terminator, and a Predator?
Yeah. I know one of them, but I don't know who the other one is, so I'm looking it up now. Ah, okay.
Arnold Schwarzenegger, obviously. Someone else who was in a Predator movie that was also in an... Well, because Predator is an alien. Does that count?
No, it doesn't. You know what they mean. You're not going to cheat your way into this one.
I'm not. An alien and Predator. What was the other one?
A Terminator.
A Terminator. Oh, right.
Yeah.
I'll
give you a hint.
Well, Michael...
One of the actors Bean did it in two films. The other one did it in 3.
Oh, so Michael Biehn.
No. You're wrong about both.
So what is it?
Michael Biehn never faced off against a Predator. Lance
Henriksen.
He faced
off against an alien.
And a Terminator. Yes.
And a Terminator. That's 2. And he said 1 did 2 and 1 did 3.
I said no. I said one of them did it in 2 films. One of them took 3 films to do it.
Oh, I didn't understand your hint.
It's okay. You were never going to get this. The 2 film one was Lance Henriksen, who was in Terminator and Aliens versus Predator.
Lance Henriksen isn't Terminator?
Yes, he's one of the cops. He gets shot by the Terminator.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Jesus.
Yeah, right? And Bill Paxton, who is the only actor to have been killed by an alien, a Terminator, and a Predator. Because he was killed by aliens in Alien. Aliens. He was killed by a Terminator in The Terminator. And he was killed by a Predator in Predator 2.
Wow, I do not remember Terminator very well at all.
Clearly not. He's
no,
one of the punks at the start.
It.
He's one of the
also,
punks at the start of the movie.
Don't remember Bill Paxton being in Predator 2.
Yeah,
he's one of the cops.
He's one of the cops in Predator 2. He gets murdered by the Predator. Yeah.
Jesus,
I know.
Wow.
There you go. All right, valuable lesson learned. That's a tough question.
Valuable.
I totally forgot about Bill Paxton. I had Lance Henriksen. I didn't have Bill Paxton. Geez. All right. Next up, I believe we have a list.
We do. We actually have 2 lists.
Okay.
This week. We're going to compare and contrast because I found the same list twice on the same website with different entries.
Okay.
Okay.
Go.
So the list is 5 best Lovecraft adaptations and 5 worst according to IMDb.
Oh, Of course, but then how can they be different if it's according to IMDb?
Right? One of these is written in September 2020 and the other in November 2020.
Whoa. Are you telling me that the three, like in that 3 month stretch, IMDb's rankings changed so much? Okay. I need to hear this list. Go.
Okay. All right. So we'll start September of 2020.
Right.
The best Lovecraft adaptation, according to IMDb, was The Whisper in Darkness with a 6.6.
Wait, Reanimator doesn't have higher than 6.6? Mm-hmm. What the hell is wrong with IMDb? Anyway, please continue. Which one is Whisper in the Darkness? I mean, I'm familiar with the story. I just don't think I've seen that adaptation.
It's from 2011. It's black and white. This came up on another
one. Right. Good. Yes. The black and white movie. Okay. I do remember this. Yeah. My bad.
Okay.
All right.
All right. In November of that year, the best adaptation, The Thing. Ugh, we've been over that. But with an 8.1.
Not an adaptation. You can make the argument it was inspired by. We had a whole debate about that last week. But you can't say it's an adaptation. Those words mean something.
Yep.
And, oh wow, well at least we, we know how they changed between the September and November. They gave up on the concept of words meaning things. So there's your answer. All right, please continue.
Ready for the, okay, worst. Right. From September.
All
right. Cthulhu with a 4.6.
Oh. Worst. I don't think I've seen Cthulhu.
Worst in November.
Yeah.
Alone in the Dark with a 2.4.
Wait, is Cthulhu the one about the gay guy who goes to his hometown and Tori Spelling is there?
I don't know.
Because it wasn't very good, if that's the one they're talking about.
It doesn't tell me who's in it or the orientation of the main characters. Sorry.
I apologize. Please continue.
The Seattle professor, does that help? Drawn into the world of the occult?
No, probably not.
Back to his hometown in
Oregon?
Actually,
yeah, that does sound like the movie I was talking about. And it's just an adaptation of The Shadow Over Innsmouth, except in Oregon instead of New England.
Okay.
Yeah.
So why is it called Cthulhu?
Branding purposes.
God.
I know.
Okay. All right. Best from September, From Beyond, with 6.7.
Okay, now we're getting somewhere. I love me some From Beyond.
Oh, best from November, Dark City, with a 7.6. I don't consider Dark City to be...
It's not even Lovecraftian.
Lovecraftian.
Not only is it not an adaptation, it's not even Lovecraftian. It just isn't. Sorry, guys. You're just not. All right, next up.
Okay, next we have...
I didn't realize the bests were counting up. That's why I was so angry about Reanimator. Obviously, Reanimator is going to be higher on the list.
Okay, right. Worst from September.
You're right.
The Thing on the Doorstep.
A different 3.7. Adaptation?
I guess so.
Because this movie just came out. Oh, right. I forgot they changed the title to Suitable Flesh. My bad. Sorry.
Well, this one, again, this is Thing on Doorstep for 2014. This list is written in 2020.
Yeah, exactly. No. I forgot about that, and I have not seen this adaptation of Thing on the Doorstep, so there you go. All right.
Okay, worst from November, The Doom's Chapel Horror with a 3.5. I don't know what this is.
The Doom's Chapel Horror. No, never heard that name before.
But, okay, listen to this.
Please.
The Doom's Chapel Horror harkens to the title of a Lovecraft story entitled The Dunwich Horror. No, it's okay. Not. Just because there's the word horror in the... Well, anyway.
They just, I mean...
But there's
okay, it's but a place with a horror. Yeah, it's a place with a
but,
horror.
But, no. Okay, let me finish. The Doom's Chapel Horror harkens to the title of a Lovecraft story entitled The Dunwich Horror, but there's really no relation between the two.
Okay, you got me. Just like the famous movie Cthulhu.
It says, we follow Kyle Cole, a man who was somehow framed for the murder of his brother.
Somehow. Palpatine returned. It's just, you know, these things happen.
And apparently the brother is some kind of, like, a Laura Palmer type from Twin Peaks. I don't know what this guy is going for when he's trying to write this.
All right.
So if this has nothing to do with Lovecraft, well, why did you put it on his list?
The title. Title only. And I do love the idea that he's like, the blank horror. Isn't there an H.P. Lovecraft story called The Blank Horror? Goes on my list of famous Lovecraft adaptations.
My God.
All right, go.
Okay, that's from September. The Haunted Palace with a 6.8.
Oh, The Haunted Palace.
What is that? This?
Is that, okay, question. This is going to sound weird. Is that the Roger Corman movie? What does it say about it?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Then I know which one it is. Okay. Movie. Yes. I am familiar with this one and I remember it being okay. So there you go.
Okay.
You know, there was a time at which I would literally watch anything even tangentially Lovecraft related. So I saw a lot of questionable movies like Cthulhu, for example. Okay.
All right. Okay, what are we at? Where are we at? Best from November.
Yeah.
The Lighthouse with a 7.5.
It's weird that The Lighthouse only has a 7.5. I think that's a better movie than they put down, but could not be less Lovecrafty. I assume we're talking about The Lighthouse, the black and white Willem Dafoe movie?
It doesn't say who's in it.
It's from 2020 though, right?
It doesn't even give me a date. It is a black and white movie.
That, the Willem Dafoe one is in black and white, and Robert Pattinson, yeah? From the maker of the Vivitch.
The Lighthouse is the second film to be released by Robert Eggers, who also, yeah.
No, it's the movie I was thinking of. It's just weird that they would be so coy about it. Couldn't be less Lovecrafty. And the weird part is,
isn't this about the second you guys list, to go crazy and like kill each other?
Yeah, in a lighthouse. I'm not going to spoil it, but yeah, guys who go crazy tending a lighthouse. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
like a real thing that happened. It's a well-known story, and people like to make movies about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Make up what happened to these two dudes.
Yep. And this is one of those movies. Just like, what do you call it? The Perfect Storm. They just like making up stories about what happened to dudes.
Yeah.
Famous dudes who got murdered. Not murdered in that case.
The film is notably more Lovecraftian, but not in the way all the tentacles in the trailer would have you expect. What?
Because, you know, they're scared of squids. The reasonable thing to be afraid of. It is not. It is a horror movie. I wouldn't call it Lovecrafty at all.
You're right.
All right.
God.
Next.
Okay.
Up.
So next we have best from September. Sorry, worst. We're on to worst now. Worst from September is the Dunwich Horror from 2009 with a 3.5.
Okay. There we go.
Okay.
We've already covered that. So we talked about the other horror. This is the one with Dean Stockwell from the 1970s. It is like an adaptation of the Dunwich Horror. It's just not fantastic.
It says 2009.
Oh, sorry, 2009. So it's not the 70s one. Wow. Okay. I haven't seen this then. All right.
Okay. Worst from November, The Haunter of the Dark 2 with 3.6.
Oh my God. Yes, please. Tell me more. All right.
This film is about a writer who is dreams of a town called Providensk.
Okay, not how you spell that name.
It says here, which is probably a reference to Providence, where Lovecraft spent a bunch of time.
Yep.
He decides to head to town, for better or worse, and as the movie goes on, we find out that it's definitely for worse.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
Okay, I know.
Okay. All right, I think we're rounding out. Oh no, best. Okay, best from September.
Right.
The Call of Cthulhu from 2005 with 7.2.
That's the silent film version one.
Yes, I believe so.
I really enjoyed that.
It is very good. Yeah. Okay, best from November is The Mist with a 7.1.
We agreed last week that, okay, so the second list is actually a Lovecraft-inspired-by list that isn't great, and they just gave it the wrong name. is clearly what happened here, because not one of these have been based on a Lovecraft story.
Well, I guess not. But okay. The author seems to think they're Lovecraftian for some reason.
Yeah, but that's not adapted from Lovecraft. That's Lovecrafty. We can debate whether or not they are Lovecrafty. We think most of them aren't, but at least, like, the real sin here is the title of the list, not the text of the
well,
list.
Well, we're not done yet. We're not done with this list.
You're absolutely right.
Okay, so now we're on to worst from September. Something called Chill, the 3.2.
It's not great.
Okay.
Yeah, it's an adaptation of Cool Air. I've seen it. It is not great.
Not good. Okay. All right. Why are there more worsts here?
I don't know.
Oh, they're two worsts in a row and then a best. That's what they're doing.
Okay.
Okay. Worst from November of that year, The Barge People with a 4.0. What?
Never heard of this. Although with the title, an adaptation of Shadow of Innsmouth, I assume?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. Oh, this one doesn't do two worsts and a best.
Ooh.
Okay, we'll go on to, okay, worst. We'll do two worsts and a best. Okay, so worst from September 2020, Beyond the Wall of Sleep with a 2.8.
Okay, I haven't seen this.
From 2006.
That's going to be a real hard thing to adapt, so I understand why it might not have turned out well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay, worst from November, Dark Heritage with a 4.2.
Oh, it means nothing to me. What is that?
It says here, well, I mean, we can't take what this guy has to say with any...
It's very profoundly hit some grains of salt on this one.
Yeah, so he writes here, this film is through and through Lovecraftian. Sure, dude. All the way through to the fact that the movie checks the boxes of an old American town. What? The reporter who goes to check out some strange happenings and the weird family cult thing that Lovecraft always had going on. My goodness.
I need to slap this guy, though, is the thing. Can we look into that, slapping him?
He's written here that this is an adaptation of The Lurking Fear.
Okay.
Although it was neither marketed nor released that way. So are you making it up?
Well, sometimes you can just tell. Like, there's a new game coming out that's obviously an adaptation of Frailty, but, like, they're not calling it an adaptation of Frailty.
Right.
Yeah.
No, but, like, you don't have to pay anyone to adapt Lovecraft, I don't think.
No, that's true. It's all copyright clear. You are correct.
Okay, are we ready for the best? Best of the best.
Reanimator, obviously, is the highest scoring
one. Yes, it is Reanimator for the September list.
Score. And what is the number on IMDb?
7.2.
I'm sad it's not an 8, but I'll take it.
Okay, and for the other list.
What is the best?
Do you have any guesses?
Well, I can't because I have no idea what this guy thinks is Lovecraftian based on his list. RoboCop. There, done.
I don't know. The best movie, just overall.
It would be hilarious if it was in the Mouth of Madness, but I know that there's no way it has a high IMDb score.
No, it is Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, okay. I mean, we already talked about how this wasn't really, how this was a not Lovecraftian movie set in the world of Lovecraft. Mm-hmm. But I understand, like, this is the first time on this guy's list I have 100% understood what he was doing.
Whoa! Oh, holy shit, listen to what this guy wrote about Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, no.
The Cabin in the Woods is a film that seems at first to be just a silly little satire about slashers. Maybe even one that's not quite as smart as it thinks it is.
What?
Dude. Wow.
Oh, you think you're smarter than Cabin in the Woods.
You don't. You didn't understand the movie you just watched.
Apparently not. Okay. Does he turn around with regretting everything he's just said?
He says, however, that couldn't be further from the truth. The film takes place among a group of friends who are on a camping trip. Nope, that's not what's happening.
A cabin in the woods. It's right there in the title.
Which is a familiar enough plot. They then have various horror movie monsters unleashed upon them. We find the ones orchestrating it aren't evil.
Just the one.
But trying to save the planet from an even bigger, far more Lovecraftian threat. This guy says he didn't understand the movie and doesn't remember it very well.
Also, there was only one monster unleashed on them, a zombie, redneck zombies.
Yeah.
Redneck torture zombies.
Redneck torture zombies. which is different from zombies.
It is. It's 100%. Oh, Kevin is on the, did I tell you about this? I was reading a thing and yeah, the Drew, oh God, Drew, I'm blanking his last name. But anyway, he confirmed that the Kevin, how like Kevin is one of the names.
Yes.
Is in fact the Kevin from, Sin City.
Oh,
Elijah
okay.
Wood from Sin City. He yes, he confirmed, yes, the theories are correct. That was a reference to Elijah Wood from Sin City. Okay. He was on the board. He is in one of the boxes. Kevin from Sin City. Isn't that great?
That
I know.
So great.
If only he could have actually been there in one of the boxes.
That would have been amazing.
I know. Oh, so cool. But yes, it is, that is what the Kevin meant. All right. Despite people's confusion about what they mean, Lovecraft is a really popular topic for making horror movies about, so I have to ask, do you think they're going to keep making them?
I would imagine so, but I can't say for sure, because this week's upcoming horror movie is called Latency.
Ooh. Something about online gaming, I assume.
When Hannah, a professional gamer...
Yes!
Who suffers from acute agoraphobia receives new equipment that enhances her game. She begins to wonder if it is reading her mind or controlling it.
Oh.
Nice. Indeed.
Tell me more. Who made this? Who's in it?
I really don't have much to tell you.
No.
There are two women listed here, Sasha Luss and Alexis Wren. Don't know who they are.
Neither of them.
Written and directed by James Croak.
Nope.
This is the feature film directorial debut of James. Described as a gamer action thriller, and it is PG-13.
Oh, well that part I'm less excited about, but still. Just the last, to be fair, the last gamer action thriller we got was the movie Gamer, and that didn't turn out so.
No, it did not.
I know it has its defenders, it's just they're wrong. They really are.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah. We all love the man, but come on. Be honest with yourselves. Look into your heart. You know it to be true. All right. Let's get into the movies we actually watched this week.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
Oh, my God. So we begin tonight's double feature with The Unnameable.
Ooh.
A group of Miskatonic University students breaks into an old house for a night of fun, unconcerned about the legend of a monster that lives there.
So yeah, the opening where the guy tells the story of the thing that happened years and years and years ago, he is describing the story of The Unnameable.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That is the story he's telling. So the story, the H.P. Lovecraft story, The Unnameable, the guy going into the house, going mad because he saw something in the window. Yes. That is the plot of the story, The Unnameable. That's just him telling the actual H.P. Lovecraft story. In case you're wondering, that's the connection. So this is set 60 years after the story, The Unnameable happened, or 80 years or whatever. So there you go.
But there's a thing that happened 300 years ago.
Yes, there's also a thing that happened 300 years ago that provides the origin story for the Unnameable. Yes. And that is, in fact, how the movie opens. Mm-hmm. It is weird that this is effectively just like a remake of Hell Knight, but with an H.P. Lovecraft monster in it. In a lot of ways.
Seen Hell Knight?
Yes.
Yes.
That is the one with the gorked-out son.
Yes.
That is where that comes from. We've been talking about him for a decade. Constantly referencing the gorked out son they kept. But yes, it's basically a generic 80s slasher film with a tenuous connection to H.P. Lovecraft in that one of the characters is Randolph Carter, who was H.P. Lovecraft's self-insert character. And I'm just going to say something. I love this guy.
Oh my God, I love to hate this guy.
Really?
Wow.
He's so insufferable. I love it.
That is what I was going to say. Yes.
Yes. He is so insufferable. He is the worst. But the weird part is, I think that's true to what it would be like to hang out with H.P. Lovecraft.
Probably.
I feel like this is so accurate. I feel like they have captured the spirit of H.P. Lovecraft in this character. And maybe he wouldn't appreciate that, but it's true. Like, I think this man is H.P. Lovecraft, and the only problem is that he wasn't played by Jeffrey Combs. This is the only thing wrong with this character.
Oh my god. Oh. No, the other thing wrong with the character is that he's wearing a wedding ring.
I didn't notice that! Oh no!
Crazy.
Oh, yes. It's terrible.
How is this guy married? Oh my god, who could stand to be around him?
Well, it's the actor who was married, not the character.
Take off his ring.
I know.
I understand all of that, but still, it was just very distracting.
It was distracting. I did not notice the ring, so I was not distracted in the same way that you were. But yes.
Also, how old are these people supposed to be? Because Howard is supposed to be a freshman. Like, yeah. I'm sorry.
On no planet.
No reality is this dude a freshman
know,
in university.
Right? There's no
Come
way.
On. There's no way this guy is 18 or 19 years old.
No, no. Like, if they were all grad students, I would have accepted it. But then why
well,
are they doing
thought,
frat
But they're not
things?
Grad students.
Well, the weird part is, in the second film, it kind of seems like they're all
like
grad
they are.
Students.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I guess they realize it was
how ridiculous
the age
it
of the
was.
Actors is a little bit of an issue.
Totally. It's pretty clear in the second one that they're all supposed to be grad students.
Yeah.
But it you're right. In the first one, they're supposed to be freshmen, and you just don't believe it for a second.
Also, like, I get it. Maybe this guy, they're supposed to be preppy and they're rich and what have you, but I'm sorry, no one in their late teens or early 20s wears tweed. It just doesn't happen.
No. Not even in the 80s. It's just not plausible. Oh god. Yeah, but the fundamental thing is, look, there's a monster in the house, we gotta get him into the house, and this is what I liked about the movie. Again, how insufferable the Lovecraft character Randolph Carter is. And he's just like, yeah, I found a house full of mysteries. You go worry about saving people's lives. I'm gonna be busy reading this book in this house full of mysteries.
Yep.
Cause that is all he cares about.
Nope, doesn't give a shit about anybody else.
Oh, there's a, you know, yeah. The girl my friend likes is trapped here with a monster and the girl who likes my friend and then, you know, like there's some frat guys getting killed. Also our friend who we basically, I mean, I didn't mean to, but I accidentally dared into spending the night in the house. Definitely got murdered here, and that doesn't bother me at all.
At all. Nope. Nope.
Like, what a character this guy is.
Oh my god, he just lives in his own little bubble. And
I know.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
It's incredible, but it's like, it's all completely intentional. It's not like they accidentally made this guy the worst. Like, that's what this movie's about.
Like, how much the worst this guy is.
Yes!
And I love it when he's like, going out, he just yells up the stairs, going outside.
Yeah.
He just pieces out of there.
No. Oh my god.
Like, how do you not hear all the running and screaming that's happening in this house? Like, I get it, it's bigger on the inside, but still, you need to be aware that there is stuff happening elsewhere.
I did like the comment that it was bigger on the inside to like justify the external house they use versus the sets they were on.
Because it just goes on for days.
It does. It is
there are so many hallways and doors.
Like, I saw the outside of that house. That is
it's
a six-room house, tops. But the thing is, like, just for an 80s slasher film about a gargoyle killing people, I mean, it's not terrible by
it's
any means.
It's not terrible. It's not great.
It's not great.
It's a little bit boring, to be honest.
It's kind of a dull watch. There are some very gratuitous breasts in it.
The guy had just the best euphemism I have ever heard.
Really?
Yeah, he says, let's try to, what does he say, a parallel parking space?
Oh, yes! Okay, yeah, that was a
That's
pretty good
amazing.
Line. That was a really good line.
He's like, let's look for a parallel parking space.
No complaints. That was a really good line.
God, that
yes,
was great.
Please, more of this.
That's part of the movie right there.
But like, so there's a gargoyle chasing around this house, and the father, and the thing is, there's little good pieces of writing. Like the fact, like when you get the, when Howard's reading the old man's, Like, the writing he had left about his daughter and how he kept her trapped, and just the idea that I have trapped her within the woods of this house, but houses don't last forever. Mm-hmm. So I have planted a forest around it, but, you know, I am very old and trees grow very slowly.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's just a good line.
Yeah, it's good writing.
Like,
it is.
It's a well-written thing that, like, I mean, it's not exactly like Lovecraft's language, but it captures the spirit.
You don't want it to be Lovecraft's language, because his stuff is real dense.
It is.
All that florid prose.
Oh, absolutely.
Wears you down.
I would argue that it does capture the spirit of the world that Lovecraft stories are set in.
No, it does. It does.
Yeah, and so I thought that was, like, not an unusually good, but it's like, we don't always get that. And yes, it is a generic monster movie that just happens to feature a Lovecraft, that just happens to be based loosely on a Lovecraft story and is mostly just about a killer gargoyle. But it is, like, the guy who made it clearly is genuinely a lover of the work, right?
Yeah.
Clearly is a big fan, clearly understands the references, clearly wants to put it in, and in the character of Randolph Carter, like, absolutely gets who Lovecraft was. Like, there's just people dying all around, and it's like, no, I gotta find out what's down going on in this house. And it gets pulled underground. leading to one of my favorite moments in the movie, where, Howard.
Howard
has gone outside. Right, has gotten his new girlfriend suddenly. He's gotten her outside. Very abrupt them getting together. But anyway, he's gotten her outside.
Well, that kind of trauma bonding, right?
Like, that's true. I guess what it is. It's a speed situation.
Terrible thing. It's exactly, yes.
It is a speed situation. So he escorts her outside. Then he's like, I gotta go back and get Howard. We can't leave him in there. Goes back in. 10 seconds later. Can't find Howard. Let's go. And I just love the idea that that character got like 10 feet inside the house and thought, what the hell am I doing?
Right?
And just ran back out. No, but I can't run, I can't run right back out or she'll think I'm a coward. You know what? 10, 9, 8. Okay, now I'm got it. I don't know.
Now I can go.
Now I can go. We are out of here. And then Howard still gets rescued, thankfully.
Right.
And, we get a, I know, but just the Evil Dead inspired ending of, yeah, no, the trees save the day. Like, the trees were there, he cast the spell, and the trees do save the day.
It was like a little out of nowhere, even though he mentioned the trees earlier, it's like, yeah, you need like,
more of a
breadcrumbs there to like lead us down that trail.
I mean, technically there was a setup and a payoff, but you are right. We could have used a full, a little more of a lead up to the day being saved by trees.
You spent the whole fucking night reading this goddamn Necronomicon, Lovecraft. Sorry, Carter.
You can call him Lovecraft. It's accurate.
Right? You can fill us in on what you learned.
Yeah, that would have been nice. Alright, but yes, it's not the best, but we have seen much worse 80s slasher films than this one. And in the character, like, this wonderful asshole of Randolph Carter, you have this unique character that you just don't see. Like, this fully realized dude who you know who he is right away.
Oh, yeah.
And he is constantly like, yep, I know who this guy is. He's a fun asshole to watch. And I just, I want to see how he reacts to these situations. And the film did not disappoint. I definitely was a big fan of this guy.
So, do you think, was he eavesdropping on that conversation in the library?
Absolutely.
Because they're very far away from him.
I think he was supposed to be eavesdropping.
Because that's it looked to me like he was eavesdropping. It's like, why, though? Why would you care what they're talking about?
I know, it's weird, but I really feel like he was supposed to be, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's what it seemed like. Because he knew that they were there, and he knew what they were doing.
Yeah. And I think in the script, they were like at the next table.
Right.
And when they shot it, they just didn't think about that. Is my theory of what happened here.
Okay.
So, about that library.
Yeah. So, maybe you'd like to read the text I sent you and you ignored until now.
No, is this the library from season 4 of Buffy? When they went to university.
I think it is.
It looks a lot like it.
It looks a lot like it.
It does. And I mean, this was filmed in Southern California, so it's not impossible that it would have been filmed at the same location.
Yeah.
Like, that's, yeah. that wouldn't shock me at all. So, yeah. yes, I think there's a good chance you're right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go. I concur. Yeah, I definitely think there's a good chance you're right about that library. Which is kind of neat, actually. God, if only, like, you, the use of that library had been a specific reference to this movie.
Oh my god, there's
no
way.
No, it wasn't. No, it's not, this is not a well-known film.
A handy library. And they only go there once.
Yeah.
So, that just proves to everyone that I watch too much Buffy.
A nice touch, right? And I gotta say, it, in one of the nicest things that I've seen as a trivia on IMDb, it said that the director went out of their way to hire a woman to do all of the makeup effects because the plan for the monster was to have it to be a naked woman and he didn't want the actress to be uncomfortable.
Nice. Aww.
Like, wow, that's really
that's
nice.
That's amazing.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, oh, okay.
And the
way
monster
go,
looked
dude.
Pretty good for the most part.
Yeah, for the most part.
The hands are a bit of a problem because it's clearly just a pair of gloves and they weren't
they didn't have a lot of movement to them. Yeah, it's just.
Well, no, they didn't mesh well. They didn't really blend well.
Yeah, they didn't.
With
I
the
didn't
rest
think
of her.
They felt articulated like real claws. Like they really did feel like more mittens for me. Cause like there's that scene where she like drags her hand across a guy's throat and I'm like, eh, okay.
Yeah. Oh no, for me it was just like, clearly this is where the glove ends and this is where her
where
arm
the
begins.
Arm starts. I get that.
Yeah.
Those weird furry legs. There is one legit, I think truly great joke in it.
Yeah.
Where the, I don't remember the foreign exchange, not foreign exchange, but like the foreign student's name. But she's up in the attic. They're right there up in the attic and she looks out and it's like, ah, the monster! And then and Howard's like, no, it's not the monster. Carter explained this to me yesterday. When a monster sits in front of a window for 100 years, the glass will gradually take its, so you're just seeing a picture of the monster that was held in the glass. See, walk over to the thing and I'll show you. And they both walk over and the monster's right there and attacks them.
Crashes like, through the window.
That is hilarious. Like that was genuinely hilarious. No, Howard, you don't get to be a dick. Only Randolph Carter gets to be a dick. If you try to be a dick, you're gonna get immediately punished for it. Oh, alright. So yeah, it's a movie that was better than it had to be, is what I would argue.
I guess so.
It had more wit, you know?
I suppose.
Yeah, it had more wit than it needed to.
But it is just an 80s.
Yes, it is just an 80s slasher film, but it is an 80s slasher film that I'm gonna say uses its connection to H.P. Lovecraft well. I believe it uses its connection to H.P. Lovecraft well, and it's like, there's this thing sitting there, we can get, anybody can take the branding of H.P. Lovecraft and just pop it on there because it is public domain. But this guy cared about the material enough to weave it in a way that I found interesting, and yes, satisfying. Like, I did like it for that, but you're right. It does not have higher ambitions than to be just a wittier than normal 80s slasher.
Which is fine, honestly.
But if you want higher ambitions...
Oh my god.
Would you like the craziest movie in the world?
I don't know if I go that far.
It's
but
pretty
anyway,
crazy.
Okay,
well, no, I watch these back to back. And so to go from that to this is bonkers.
So our second movie tonight is The Unnameable 2.
Yeah.
The State Winner Randolph Carter.
Yes.
Picking up immediately after the events.
Literally.
The first movie,
immediately.
Literally. Yes. Randolph Carter finds the unnameable and lifts its curse only to have freed a demon that's now running around killing people. Way to go, Randolph Carter and Professor John Rhys Davies, whose name I don't remember.
Professor Warren.
I know that
because that's what the character was named in the story, The Statement of Randolph Carter, which briefly happens in this story.
Sort of, yeah.
Sort of, yes.
I like how quickly everyone's just on board with the whole, the demon issue.
Yep.
It's like maybe a minute or two of like, that can't possibly be true. It's like, oh, you know what? I gave it some thought.
We wouldn't be at Miskatonic University if we didn't understand at least the possibility that right. we were going to be running into demons. You don't go to Arkham, Massachusetts, because you're not open to studying demons. That's just a fact. It's like going to school, a university in Hawaii and not being willing to learn to surf. No, right. you're going like, to learn to surf.
What are you doing?
You went what to university in Hawaii.
In Hawaii.
This one's on you, pal. Expecting to not learn how to surf. The hell's wrong with you? I should have made a community reference and said going to university in Santa Fe and not learn how to do pottery. But,
oh my god.
That would have been a very deep cut.
It would have been
a very deep cut had I thought to do. Alright. More importantly though, yeah, this one is bonkers. It picks up right after. Howard's in the hospital because he's having trouble recovering. He's trapped in nightmares. His new girlfriend is fine. We'll never see her again. She does not appear in the film.
They escort her out of the movie.
A different actress, a different actress with a different hair color is escorted out of the film. You couldn't just get a blonde lady?
Right? Jeez.
Come on, put in a little bit of effort here, guys.
That was weird. That was really weird.
Is escorted out of the film. And then, the principal, sorry, the dean, you know, David Warner in a one-day cameo.
I wish he were in it more.
Yeah, well, they could only afford him for one day since they were playing all that, you know, sweet John Rhys Davies money.
So. He's made some strange movies, that man.
He really has. The man loves to work. You can't say he doesn't love to work.
That's true. That's true.
But yes, so they go and we get this interesting thing where their mathematician friend. So basically, Randolph is trying to decrypt some stuff from the Necronomicon, which he stole from the house by putting it, again, this is why I love this character, stuffing it under the body of his near comatose friend as he's being wheeled off to the hospital. He's like, don't tell the doctors or cops you have this.
How is no one gonna find that?
Apparently they didn't. They
lift him off one gurney onto another when he gets to the hospital.
Yep. They had to, but apparently he managed to keep it on himself.
But he gets to see it. I know! Like, the hospital room is like, yeah, it's right here, dude. It's like, under the covers.
Dude managed to put it under his shirt or something. I don't know. But again, it's just like, this is the kind of outrageous stuff you have Randolph doing that really made me, you know, get fond of this character. You don't see characters in slasher films behaving like this. Like,
well, just cause everything he does is so self-serving.
I know!
And he genuinely doesn't understand that he's an asshole.
I know! Again, this is what I love about him. It's such a well-written character.
Really? Well written and well acted. He's doing a great job.
Very well acted. Like, I looked up this guy's career, and it's like, hi, this is the only thing he ever did of note. And
really?
I don't know how.
But he's so good.
He's so good in this. I don't understand how this is the only thing this guy ever did. It's like, could you not use this as a perfectly good way to, like, get a better agent or something? It's such a good performance. Like, you would have only have gotten this. These are like the only movies on earth that you could have been the lead of, but you could have had a good career as a character actor. Mm-hmm. I just don't get it. But anyway, so she's trying to decode it and his friend comes in, one of his friends from class comes in and points out that the equation on the board looks like stuff from quantum physics.
Yes.
Right. And so he gradually starts to understand that what's going on in the Necronomicon is an attempt to explain, you know, alternate dimensions and higher math using, again, the language of like the 12th century or whatever. And that's an interesting idea.
Well, it's Arabic, which he doesn't read, and then like annotations, I think, in Greek, which he does read.
Yep.
A smattering of English here and there.
Translations that were done by the dad of the unnameable.
And then the language of Cthulhu.
Yes. It's a lot. It's a lot to try and decode.
There's a lot going on in this book. Anyway, so he convinces Howard.
Yeah.
The day after.
I know.
He's, like, he gets him to check himself out of the hospital and go with him back to the house.
Yep.
And he's like, Well, I think the gargoyle thing is still in there, and it's like, why would you think that?
Yeah.
Well, for no reason, I just do. Okay.
Well, he also, whether or not the gargoyle is there, he does want to explore the tunnels. Because he briefly saw the tunnels down.
He discovered a warren of tunnels, yes, in the first movie, he just mentions it. So he and John Rhys Davies go down into the tunnels, and they do indeed find the unnameable down
trapped
there.
Trapped by the roots of the trees that grabbed her.
Right. And also the body of one of the women that she killed in the first movie that we just see get pulled into a wall.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well that's a nice little
payoff
for that.
Yeah.
And then they decide to just read from the book.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how or why they stumble upon this particular incantation, thinking that it's going to
release it. Yeah, it is weird that they think that that's going to work. But
so,
because
John Rhys Davies can he like knows the Cthulhu language a little bit.
Yes.
Anyway, whatever. They do their spell and it seems to work. The demon leaves the body of the woman.
But
so now
this is actually, part of it was really clever. I just wanted to point out because they had figured out by looking at, you know, this sample of the demon's blood or DNA that it seems to be two different creatures operating in the same space. Like, cause they have different kinds of cells crossing over each other without interacting.
So that's the quantum mechanic equation.
Quantum entanglement, whatever you want to call it.
It's the so that goes back to those equations that were on the board. This is how two bodies can occupy the same space at the same time.
Yeah. Which, very cool idea. I thought that was a pretty darn cool idea. Then we had the follow up to that. Which is really neat.
John Rhys Davies is just, like, I would say he's over-prepared for this adventure and also grossly underprepared. Because you brought a syringe full of insulin.
Because the plan is to make the demon think that the body it's in is going to die, so it will jump out of the body to protect itself, is his plan, and it totally works.
But, you didn't think maybe then you might have a demon to deal with?
I know! It doesn't occur to him at all!
You know what? There's no plan. There's no.
He has no plan B. No, he does not. He does not have a
plan.
And that is a problem.
Plan A.
That literally gets him killed. His failure to have a plan B. You're absolutely right. But it was one hell of a plan A. You gotta give him that.
Oh my god. It's absolutely one hell of a plan.
As far as plan A goes, you gotta tip your cap to the guy.
But now they've got this naked woman on their hands.
Yep, Julie Strain,
who is nude for a lot of the movie.
Leading to literally a hilarious moment. They gave her super long Lady Godiva hair.
Yeah.
So you're not seeing a lot of her naked, but like when they drag her, when like Randolph drags her out of the hole and Howard keeps trying to put a jacket on her.
That was very funny.
Throwing off the jacket.
I don't want to wear that.
What is wrong with you? Because again, she's a monster. She's never worn clothes and her entire life has been quantumly entangled with a monster. She's never had clothes on in her entire life. Oh my god, it's such a good.
And of course, like, Carter, it doesn't matter to him whether she's clothed or not, so they just take her to their dorm nude. And I love everyone's reaction.
Yes. They have very appropriate reactions.
It's like, a naked lady?
What?
In your room?
Howard.
What?
Sorry, Randolph Carter's room. Really?
Yeah.
Okay. And from there, like, it is just, you've got the cops who are trying to cover all this up because they know that spooky stuff happens in Arkham, Massachusetts. It does not go well for them.
Nope.
The cops have a real bad time. They are not set up to fight, deal with a monster. Julie Strain they hired because apparently that's her in the monster suit all the time. They hired her because she's like 6'1" and could accurately like do all of the monster stuff.
Are you sure? Because in the credits for this movie, there's...
Oh, sorry, no, not all the time. In the white monster face, not the monster.
No, because there is a credit for the unnameable and I think that's the white monster. And
I know
it's not her.
I know it's her sometimes. I think the other credit is the person who was in the full gargoyle suit.
No, there are three. Yeah. So there is Adla, what's her name?
Aelan or something.
Adlaya,
yes.
Something like that. Yeah. Okay, there's the unnameable, and then there's the demon itself.
Yes.
And so, there is a separate name for the unnameable and a separate name for the demon, and neither one.
Yeah, cause I know she's in the suit a bunch, but I guess when they had to both be on screen together, there was another person. But yeah, apparently it is her in the suit a bunch.
Okay. Anyway, so.
But yes, she's 6'1", cause the monster is huge, and so is she. And they wanted to get someone who like could physically be the monster.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, she had very little dialogue in the movie. But she has to do a lot with reactions and mm-hmm. animalistic behavior. And when the university friend is trying to dress her, it's quite funny.
Yes.
She's basically just a wild animal refusing to have clothing put on it.
Yeah.
It's a good, funny bit. And of course, mostly it is a movie about them trying to get to a library to find a book to figure this out. And that's like an hour of the movie.
Their pages are torn out of the Necronomicon.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot, there's a lot of waffling in this film.
There is. That's true.
And it's like, oh, we freed the demon. Or like, the demon dissipated. It's gone. Is it gone? I think it's gone. No, you know what? I don't think it's gone. No, it's definitely not gone. No, it is gone.
Yeah.
Is it though? Like, there's a lot of that.
There is. You're not wrong.
Oh my god, there is so much of it. And so, when they finally realize that, yeah, there is an actual corporeal demon running around.
Yep.
They have to get the pages that have been torn out of the Necronomicon.
And hidden away.
And hidden away someplace. So they have to get to the rare book library. So there's a lot of, a lot of action is set in and around the library.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bit of a faff when they're trying to get other professors to help them.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So in the same way that the first movie dragged a little bit, there's a little bit of...
That leads to, again, a genuinely hilarious moment when a guy shows, the professor shows up to help.
And he just like, he can't process what's just happened.
I know.
Absolutely cannot. Get over what he just witnessed.
Yeah. What the? Oh my god.
That was well done. Yeah.
I just love this. There's this monologue about, you can't just tear someone's heart out. You have to stab in. But after you've stabbed in, you can't
there's
just pull
in the body.
The hole.
And he just goes on and on and on.
There's a whole monologue about how this isn't possible.
It's great.
Full of great moments like that.
Yeah, that's a good moment.
Yes, and then you have a monster lady fall in love with Randolph Carter. Cause, you know. Sure, I guess.
That happened a bit. I mean, you've known each other not even 24 hours.
That's true.
No, but maybe, cause it's night, so maybe 24 hours have passed by now.
She is a 400 year old monster, so I don't know what she's looking for in a man.
That's true. But then Randolph Carter, he's in love with her, and it's like, I get it.
There
aren't a lot of women in your life, they're not throwing themselves at you, because you're an asshole. Although women are attracted to assholes, but not that kind of asshole.
No, not that kind. But more importantly, she is, like, in the flesh, all of the crazy stuff he's obsessed with. So I understand how that would, like, make him immediately fall in love with her.
Although I suspect the kind of love that he feels for this woman... It's quite different from the kind of love his peer group would have
for
other people. It's
100%,
not,
yes.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be with you on that one completely.
Yes.
But yes, and you know, okay, you can watch this movie. I need to talk about what happens at the end of this movie, but the crazy part is, I want people to watch this movie. So here's a funny thing that happened when I went to Prime, to search for this. Because I knew the Unnameable was on Prime. So I typed in the Unnameable, and the Unnameable did not come up in the search window, but the Unnameable, as I was typing in, is like, do you mean the Unnameable too? No, I mean the Unnameable, so I hit...
I wish I know this was on Prime. I watched it on Plex.
Oh, no, listen. So I hit Unnameable too, and it wasn't there, but the Unnameable was. So it's like, well, why did you... You know what? Prime has a terrible UI. Let's not get into it. But anyway, so I watched The Inimable, and this is not only on Plex, but you can literally just download this from archive.org. It is a copyright cleared movie. Like, so if this has been interesting to you at all, if you just want to see Julie Strain walking around naked for an entire movie, no, I'd say 60% of a movie. This is the movie for you. But I cannot stress enough, it's so much fun. This is so much fun. But now, I'd like, go watch the movie and come back, because we need to talk about what happens at the end. Which is, the monster is trying to rejoin with her, and he knocks it out, and it has to extend its power of rejoining. And he's like, I know what I'll do. I'm going to block it with a chair.
Oh, my God. What was that?
But then, and it's like, you're like, that is the craziest idea. I have no idea when it works, but I am looking at a demon chair now, and I am happier than I have ever been. Because I am looking with a chair that is covered in flesh and has demons, a demon face on the back of the chair. Yeah. Like, this is so crazy.
But why would that even work?
I don't, because of quantum entanglement.
I don't know.
Because of quantum entanglement, and her weakness is wood, as previously established in the first film.
I didn't like it. I thought it was kind of lazy.
Maybe it's lazy, but it's also so awesome that how can you complain about a face on a chair?
No, the demon chair is funny, and then he burns it.
And then at the end of the movie, the last thing that's happening is them sitting in a fire, in front of a fire, of them burning the demon chair. And I'm like, are you not worried that's going to set the demon free again?
Right.
I'd be worried, because remember how trying to kill her let the demon out? We're just burning the demon chair.
We're just burning the demon chair.
Fine.
But then I'm like, if you can just burn the demon chair, how can no one try burning the demon? Because they shot at it a bunch, but it's like, that's all anyone ever did.
It's true. They didn't try a lot of things to deal with the demon. And tragically, Latia, whatever her name is, does not survive. Because again, she's 400 years old. The only thing keeping her alive was being... merged with the demon. So once she's not merged with the demon anymore, tragically that's it for her. Which is, you know, a very tragic scene. Poor her. Poor Randolph.
It's
a rough ending.
Indeed.
But as I got to the end of this movie, I'm like, I'm so sad they didn't keep making these. I'm like this ridiculous asshole dragging his, you know, bland friend into these terrifying H.P. Lovecraft adventures. They clearly wanted to make more of them. It ends with them being frustrated that the only evidence they have of all of this happening is a blurry photograph. And I'm like, bitch, why are you burning the chair if evidence is what you want?
Right?
Pretty good evidence, a demon chair.
I feel like Lovecraft. Randolph Carter would want to keep the chair.
Yes.
He's just like the kind of asshole who would keep that around.
100%. That is, burning the chair is the part I understood least. But it's like, you get to the end of this movie and I'm like, oh, they wanted to do a whole series of these. And given how bonkers this movie is, I'm really sad they didn't get to make more of these.
Yeah, they probably could have been a lot of fun.
Yeah, like, they made like 3 or 4 reanimators. I could have used some more of these. And it's really sad they didn't get a chance to make them. But yeah, I had seen this as a youth, right? And I didn't remember how crazy and fun it was. You know,
right.
I remembered the monsters. I remembered there being a lot of nudity. I remembered the demon chair. Right, but I didn't remember, or I didn't get at the time, just how witty so much of this and how fun and different it is. Because again, it is, the first one was just a slasher film that was wittier than it needed to be, written by a guy who was, you know, in love with the Lovecraft stuff. And this one, he actually got to cut loose with it a little, and I think it's a lot better as a result.
It is a better movie. The monster looks better in this one also.
Absolutely.
Although the scene where she flies isn't great.
Oh no! You mean where she ziplines awkwardly?
Yeah.
Yeah, they did not have the technology to do that well. Oof.
Yeah.
It's like I was literally back watching popcorn. Just this awkward zipline.
And then there are so many cops, and they all look exactly the same.
That didn't help. No.
So I didn't know who was dead.
Not that it matters.
No, it really doesn't.
But yeah, you get these generic cops just running around the library stacks getting just slaughtered by this thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very entertaining scene.
Yeah.
It really is.
And them crawling through the vents. I mean, that went on for a little. That went
a little long, yes. Yeah. I mean, the movie was maybe, I would argue, a little longer than it needed to be.
I did not find it funny that the demon couldn't get into the vents because of her weight.
I know!
It was pretty good!
Yeah.
Also, what kind of magical locking mechanism is on these doors that you can't shoot it open?
I know!
Oh my god!
It's like,
Safest room on campus is the rare book library.
Apparently. Well, I mean, it has the hidden pages of the Necronomicon, so yeah. I kind of get it. The secret, you know, too hot for TV pages from the Necronomicon, yeah. You gotta keep that stuff secret. I'll buy that. But anyway. But it's like, tell me you wouldn't have watched three more of these with like, you know, grad student or adjunct professor. Randolph Carter.
And his buddy Howard.
And his buddy Howard trying to solve spooky mysteries while David Warner tried to cover up, you know, the connection of the university to all this evil. You would have kept watching these.
I'd watch the crap out of that.
Like, it's sad we didn't get more unnameable movies. You would have had to change the title after this one, because she wasn't coming back again.
Yeah, well, like he just goes on to have other spooky mysteries.
He would have gone to Innsmouth. It would have been great.
Right?
You know?
Yes.
Ugh. All right. But anyway, I would have been, he would have run into the guy from the Dunwich Horror who came and tried to steal a book from the library, which is, by the way, the plot of the Dunwich Horror is a guy steals a book from a library and then like, there's a monster in a barn. That's the whole plot of the Dunwich Horror.
No, there's a little bit more to it than that. It's some kind of like, black mass and...
He wants to have a black mass.
Demon birth or something.
Well, no, but the demon... But that's the thing. It's H.P. Lovecraft, so the black mass and the demon birth all happened a long time ago.
Oh.
Don't you remember? Because the end of the thing is...
I read this stuff a long time ago. I clearly don't remember.
They were twin brothers. But the monster just favored his father, is the punchline of the story. Cause, stretched over this giant creature's back is a face that looks just like, whatever the guy's name is. I don't remember the main character's name. The villain's name. I don't remember his name, but is a face that just looked like him. And that's how you know they were twin brothers. It's just the monster favored the father is the joke at the end of it.
So the Dunwich Horror is in fact name dropped at the beginning of this movie. Everyone pronounces it. He makes a big point in the story of how to pronounce the word Dunwich.
Yeah.
Even though it's spelled Dunwich.
Yeah, but...
That's not how you say it.
Mm-hmm. And so I think that's what the sequel would have been. Someone would have tried to steal the book of the Necronomicon from the library, would have succeeded, and they would have gotten into it with that monster and the monster's brother. Like, I really think that would have been the third film, and I'm sad we didn't get that third film. All right, so yes, just a really good movie. I mean, again, it's not great, it's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but I think you can tell I liked it a lot.
You did, you liked it a lot. It had good moments, I was entertained, but again, I think my enjoyment was lessened because I watched it on Plex.
Yeah, that's not gonna help.
Don't do that.
No, do not watch. Just it's public domain. I guarantee that the company that produced this movie and has the rights to it no longer exists. Mm-hmm. And like, if it was snapped up by another company, I guarantee that company has no idea it owns this film. Like, if you're making a movie and you want to do one of those things where the characters are watching something on TV in the background, I guarantee that if you put this movie on, no one will ever notice or care. I guarantee it.
That'd be great though.
It would be a perfect thing to put in the background of another movie, yeah. But yeah, the real tragedy is that we didn't get, a third one of these and a series of these. The even bigger tragedy is that this guy didn't get to have a Jeffrey Combs style character actor career
just
a fussy jerk.
Oh, because he's so good at it.
He's so good at it! Yes. Even if this specific role is the only thing he could play, he could have done this 100 times and it always would have been entertaining. He is killing it in this movie. Right from the start of the first one, where he's telling them the story of, you know, colonial times, and his friend is a jerk to him about it, and he's like, whatever, I don't care. And I was like, we shouldn't let him be in that, get in that house. It's like, hey, he wants to go piss off a ghost, that's his problem. And his friend immediately dies. Oh good. I'm sorry, I didn't know I was gonna fall back in love with these movies, but I totally did. Alright, so that's that. Do you have any narcissism to watch?
Nope.
Okay. And the big question is, how else can people get in touch with us?
Oh, you can visit the Ava's blog at theava.com. You can stream all the episodes there. You can leave us a comment and tell us about how much you loved The Unnameable and The Unnameable 2. You can send us an email at the Ava.com. You can like us on Facebook, find us on Threads. And if you're listening on app, rate, resubscribe.
I'm going to encourage you to do all of those things. So until next time, I've been Camp Vargelon.
I've been DM.
Thanks for watching and have yourselves a great evening.
Good night.